They had a taper, umbrellas that had a taper, like that. Well, we'll imagine that the rib cage is an umbrella with the handle, the pelvis, the open end forward like the pelvis, the tip end at the lateral-occipital, and the rod of the umbrella is your central axis. And on inhalation, we're going to see the umbrella opening up. Now, the reason that I choose an umbrella for this image is that while the rib cage expands in all directions, it's not equally so. The majority of the expansion takes place within the lower ribs, and then up above there's lesser expansion. So the umbrella makes a rather nice image for that. And then on exhalation, the umbrella is going to close around its central axis, its rod, which is your central axis. Now with this, we have to stipulate something. The umbrella representing the rib cage is within the scapula, so that as you use this image, you have to be very clear about seeing the scapula on the outside of the umbrella, so that as the umbrella closes around the central axis, it doesn't take the scapula with it. We don't want to wrap the shoulders around the central axis. We're going to leave them behind, which is another way to create that space between the scapula and the ribs, which we started last night with the sponges. And this is a very effective image as you get onto it and as you begin to see the image perhaps a little more clearly than you can at first. As you work with it, you'll be able to. For the diaphragmatic aspect of breath, we're going to imagine, let me describe it with one image, and then I'd like to give you another working image, although you may use the first image I give you. The diaphragmatic action taken collectively could be imaged as a piston moving downward on inhalation. It's surrounding the central axis, the piston. Do you all know what a piston is? Piston is a plunger that moves within an opening in a cylinder. You have a cylinder with a bore in it, a hole, and the piston would be the plunger, and it moves, usually like in a car engine, down and up and down and up and down and up. Okay, so this piston action, which I'm giving as an analogous to the diaphragmatic action, moves down on inhalation, and you can go down as deep as you like. And on exhalation, it's going to rise back up. And that is happening around the central axis. I use that as a description, and you can use that as an image if you like. The image I really prefer to work with most times is to think of the central axis as a column of mercury. And the mercury is moving down the central axis on inhalation, and on exhalation it rises up. So we're going to work on that in constructive rest with forced exhalation. I mentioned that forced exhalation can take many forms, the blowing through the straw, which we've been doing, whistling, humming, singing, coughing, rather short, but it's still forced exhalation, even a sigh. What we'll do this morning is to work on that form that Todd and Swigart used, the hiss. That is, we're going to hiss air, resisting the tongue against the teeth or the roof of the mouth, and thereby achieve another kind, a little more forceful forced exhalation. Let's do that once. Let's hiss. When all the air is out, just let your breath be free and uncontrolled. Now, what is the forced exhalation? The forced exhalation is actually maintaining the inspiratory tension longer than you would in a passive exhalation. In other words, you're maintaining the diaphragm being contracted downward a little longer, and you're maintaining the expansion of the rib cage a little longer when you do forced exhalation. Depending upon the type, it's going to vary. That is the amount, the length of time, and the amount of maintaining the diaphragm depression and the rib cage expansion. That way you can gain an understanding of what it is you're doing. You cannot obviously prolong the exhalation beyond a certain point because breathing is autonomic, basically, although you can modify it with a voluntary effort, but only so long. So we're going to... Yeah?
So it maintains diaphragm downward longer and the rib expansion longer?
Mm-hmm. That's right. In other words, that thing that happens on inhalation is being maintained longer. You are using your inspiratory tension in the forced exhalation. You're maintaining it, inspiratory tension. Okay, so we're going to practice that a little bit. And now I want to give you two more things. We'll practice a little more in just a minute, but I need to tell you something else. The action of the diaphragm, contracting the diaphragm, is antagonistic to the superficial abdominal muscles. So when your diaphragm is contracting to move downward, the abdominals out here need to be released. When the diaphragm relaxes, the abdominals take on more tone. Now, what we can learn from this is something very important, that if we keep our abdominal area constantly rigid, it doesn't permit an optimal diaphragmatic action. It inhibits it. So I'm going to give you an image when we first go into constructive rest of thinking of this whole pelvic area, which touches the superficial abdominals, as being like a balloon. And we'll watch the balloon inflate, expand on inhalation, and then let it empty out on exhalation. It's a let happen thing. There's no voluntary thing there, nothing to really do except image, to get you in touch with the fact that the abdominals area here needs to be free in order for you to take a good diaphragmatic descent.
So it empties on inhalation?
Beg your pardon?
The balloon empties on inhalation?
No, it fills on inhalation and it empties on exhalation. It empties on exhalation. Mm-hmm. You will be aware of that because when you inhale, this actually does increase because the diaphragm is pushing the viscera down and out, and you get a little expansion down here. You'll feel that. So the image will go right with that. Okay, I want to work on that. That's very important because all of these other images that Swigart gives in the human movement potential, whatever, you can't get into them until you learn to release the abdominal area. Because if that's being held tight, the mercury moving down won't mean a thing to you. You just can't get into it. So we're going to do that. Now, the other thing, and this is something for you to think about for a while. We're going to work on it a little bit today. I described exhalation as the passive phase of breath, where you release the tensions of inhalation. And that's true. However, toward the end of exhalation, muscles here in the lower part of the trunk do come into play along with the abdominals at the end of exhalation, or toward the end. And they help to close the rib cage in snugly. They do that if you take a complete exhalation. Many of us don't get that far. We prematurely gulp in an inhalation before the exhalation has really taken place. One of the advantages of the forced exhalation that we've been doing, blowing through the straw and then hissing today. Now, this action of the muscles here that close the rib cage in at the end of exhalation is antagonistic to the muscles which pull the sternum up and out on inhalation. Remember I said the rib cage is lifted slightly on inhalation. Well, this closing action in here is antagonistic to this raising action. Now, what we can learn from this is that if we can learn to let the breath go full term to the end of exhalation, which we're going to practice as a forced exhalation, then it can be a key towards releasing excessive tension around this area. And what we're going to do is to do a few hisses when we get into constructive rest, and we'll be touching our partners at the top of the sternum so that they get in touch with the fact that as they get toward the end of exhalation in the hiss, or any forced exhalation, that this you'll sense is releasing, is opening up. It's a way to begin to change the pattern of holding up there. So we're going to work on that. We'll work on the mercury column. What we'll be doing is observing our partners on inhalation for the mercury image. When we see them inhaling, we'll just slide our hands down the back through the pelvis. We'll start about the 12th thoracic vertebra. As we see our partners inhaling, I want them to let the inhalation take place without voluntary control, but just let it happen as an autonomic process. I want to work also on the umbrella expanding on inhalation, and I want to work on the lower part. I don't need to work up here. Most of us have too much expansion up here anyway. So let's come down to here, and we're going to watch the ribs like an umbrella opening up. And I want you to see that happening in all directions, back as well as side. All of that in the front can open too. The ribs are going to open up like an umbrella opening all directions. Then we're going to work on the armpits. We're going to be touching under the armpits so that you can let this soften and deepen. That has to do with getting space in here that you might have missed on the umbrella. Oh, we didn't do the closing of the umbrella. Let me show you that. We're going to do that image of the umbrella while we'll be touching the scapulae so you can image the rib cage or as an umbrella on the inside of the scapulae, closing around the central axis on the hissing. Then we'll come to the armpit, softening and deepening, so that we'll get in front here what we missed when we did it from the back. So that needs to have space in there. Instead of being expanded out against here, we want this to be softly spacious in here. Okay, that pretty much, I think, takes care of what we're going to be doing. Let me double check. Oh, yes. I gave it to you already, but I want to remind you that we'll work on the sliding of the sternum up between the ears, sliding to the atlas. We'll work on the space between the glenohumeral joint and the acromioclavicular. So you give this area a little space in here. Okay, folks, we got our work cut out. Let's go to it.
Yeah.
Thank you.